Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian King, Millwall goalkeeper from 1967 to 1975. I spent the happiest years of my playing career at the Den, and I'd love to share some of the memories, stories, and personalities with you in my new book, The Lion's King. In my time, I've met some amazing characters, including Harry Cripps, Barry Kitchener, Sir Alf Ramsey, as well as the great Gordon Banks and Lev Yashin himself. My book is packed with laughs, tears, tragedies, and triumphs. So join me in my journey down Coldblow Lane and beyond. The Lion's King, available now for $19.99 at www.littlehellbooks.com. That's www.littlehellbooks.com. Come on, you lions.
You're listening to Acton Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burnley. Accept no substitute.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the return of an idea that I ran with during the last lockdown in the summertime to try and do some shorter episodes. Whether this is going to be short or not, I don't know yet. But I did some of these during the course of the summertime lockdown, where we look back in the past at various random fixtures from the past. Now, I was intending to do one of these yesterday, and circumstances got in the way of things rather, so I'm going to try and do a combo, a two-for-one deal. We know that you like these bog-off kind of arrangements, listeners, don't you? So you get two random dates for the price of one today, so that's always going to be a good value. Now, I try to do this as an on this day kind of thing. Now, the thing with on this day approaches is not every day in the past carries, you know, news or compulsive content. I've chosen two very different articles from the British newspaper archive, which is a fantastic resource. I don't know if you're, you know, kind of nerdy like me and love old newspapers. I just simply love the look, the wording, the content of these old papers from the past. And I subscribe to the British newspaper archive. There you have it. I've confessed it to you, dear listeners. But to try and find, you know, articles on a specific chosen day from the past, as selected by our random.org website, it doesn't always produce in-depth articles. Sometimes it just produces the pools for fixtures for a single day. But we'll try and do our best with whatever we turn up for both of these days. Now, first up is a fixture from 1901. It's actually Southampton 3. Millwall nil, played on the 23rd of November 1901, which was a big year in Millwall history and a big year in in national history, I suppose, with the death of Queen Victoria near the start of 1901, the end of the Victorian age, the start of the brief Edwardian era, prior to the catastrophic year of 1914 that lay just 13 years ahead as this fixture took place. Now, the actual newspaper article itself comes from a publication called the Hampshire Independent. So a Hampshire newspaper, Southampton being the home club here. And it's in the Southern League. So it's the result finished as a bit of a thumping for Millwall. Southampton 3, Millwall 0. The Lions at this point had actually had a near-death experience. I think we've touched on this in some of the history shows that I did with Neil Fissler during the course of the summertime. There was a problem with our dockside ground. That's what was called the Athletic Ground, which is nowadays to be found on the same site as the Asda at Cross Harbour. Anyone that works in and around Canary Wharf can go and see the site of one of our early grounds, because it's now covered by the Asda. So next time you're buying yourself a pint of milk for the office or getting yourself a sandwich, perhaps you might wander down to Asda. You probably don't if you're working in the high finance corporate world of international, wheeling dealing. But you might find yourself near Cross Harbour Station. And that was where the Athletic Ground was. As the name implied, the Athletic Ground was a much-needed facility on the island at that time, which was still highly industrialised. Docklands, docks were the driving industry of the area. And the trainer of the time, a chap we've also touched on in some of the previous history shows with Neil, Bob Hunter, was very keen on physical exercise, rightly so, of course, as a means of trying to improve people's lives and as a means also of improving the players available to Millwall Athletic Football Club, as they were called at that point. So the Athletic Ground literally was an athletics ground, so oval shaped, or however you describe the classical athletics track shape. It also staged events such as cycling, athletics itself. I've seen adverts for tug of war contests, all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff, as well as the football, all under the stewardship of Bob Hunter, who was a major figure that we touched on in one of the really good history shows with Neil that we did during the course of the summertime. I do recommend, if this is a subject that interests you, dear listener, then to go and check some of those out, because they're really good. And Neil's research was top. It's well worth having a listen to. The problem with the Athletic Ground, though, was that it was required by the dock owners' company. More space was needed. The docks were in full boom. This was the height of the empire trade, and it would come into the Isle of Dogs to be unloaded, and they needed more space, ever more space. So where the Lions, or the Dockers as they were known, they became the Lions later on, where they were located was needed by the docks company. Consequently, the ground was repossessed at the very end of 1900 to 101 season. So it was a real crisis. The club was left homeless after a reasonably successful period. The Lions of the South were known as one of the major clubs in English football of the time. But to be suddenly pitched homeless with no obvious alternative to be made available, because that wasn't the deal with the dock company, left the club in a situation where folding was considered. So I always think that there's a slight touch of the miraculous that we still have a football club called Millwall, because it really probably should have ended there and then on the Isle of Dogs in the early spring of 1901, when we were made homeless, and I think many of the major figures of our club's history just couldn't see a way forward. Wonderfully, a location was found, and that location, as we've mentioned a good few times over the course of our podcasts, was at what we now call Millwall Park, near the railway arches. It's now the Dockland Light Railway arches, back then an industrial railway. And the ground had to be hewn from what was probably fairly muddy waste ground located on the Isle of Dogs, scrap land that no one else was using, wanted, had any use for. So a huge achievement, I think, for the club to survive financially, and then to physically create a football ground from scratch in the space of a close season. So we're talking about, what, 2 months, 3 months perhaps, from the end of the Athletics ground to the start of what was called then North Greenwich. No relationship to the North Greenwich, where the O2 is located now on the other side of the river, of course. Now, I don't know if you do stuff like this. I sometimes, back in the normal times when you wander around London and, you know, not worry about being locked down or under the cosh of the restrictions, the COVID restrictions, I sometimes find myself over at Millwall Park. It's one of those places where it might sound a little wistful, and I apologise if I'm being wistful to you, dear listener. But sometimes I think to myself, you can close your eyes there under the railway arches and just imagine the babble of the crowd, the roar of the goals, the crunch of the tackle and the referee's whistle in what is now just Parkland. Back then, it was the home of Millwall Athletic Football Club for about 9 years up until 1910, when we would relocate to Coldblow Lane. But I'm straying from the path of today's fixture, which is Southampton 3, unfortunately, at the and Millwall 0, played at the Dell, 23rd of November 1901. Now, one of the side effects of Millwall losing its ground, it didn't just lose its ground at that point, it also lost most of its team. These were professional players, and with every chance of the club folding in about April, May of 1901, players had to, you know, earn money, moved on to other clubs. So the Millwall lineup at Southampton in the November, shortly after survival, shall we say, is relatively unfamiliar one to me. I mean, I don't class myself as a particular club historian. There are others out there that do that kind of thing far, far better than me. There's only one name in the Millwall team that immediately springs to recognition for me, and that's the goalkeeper. A huge figure known as Tiny Joyce, playing in goal for the Lions. The rest of the Millwall lineup are names that don't immediately spring to my knowledge. So I'm going to look at Tiny Joyce short. I'm just going to read out the Millwall team that took the field at the Dell for this particular game. So in the front line, on the wing, we've got a Curtin, Watkins, Hulse, Ferrier and Hamilton. The halfbacks, back line, Dove, Bell and Riley. And then the fullbacks, Dunn and Haley. Halley, perhaps. And in goal, the formidable figure of Tiny Joyce. Now, once again, I will stick a link into the show that Neil and I did in the summer, because we touched on the life and times of John Tiny Joyce, John William Joyce, to give him his full name. Great photo of him. I'll publish this as well, with his tough, hard face. These were hard men in these teams, dear listeners. And John Tiny Joyce was a tough character. And he's staring back at me as I'm speaking to you right now, his eyes almost fixing me under his glare. So I better not say anything out of place for Tiny, because he was a big man by the standards of the day. 6'1". Is reportedly standing, which I suppose gives you a sense of the I'm going to touch on a bit of politics now, God, but the poverty of the day. For a man of 6'1" to be classed as a large a giant, so hence the reverse nickname of Tiny, described in an article as having a ponderous size, is, it just gives you a clue on how big most men of the time were. Now I'm going to read you a piece. I won't read it all. It's a piece from the Athletic News, I believe, written a few years before, so probably in the late 1890s, regarding John William Joyce, known as Tiny, as it says here. The reason for the sobriquet, great word, I might use that more often. The reason of the sobriquet is because he is not tiny, okay. He is as strong as a horse, the Athletic News says, a giant, lusty, vigorous, over 6 feet high and weighs close upon 16 stone. Free and easy, almost happy-go-lucky, you smile at this modern Hercules as he answers to the nickname of Tiny, the suggestion of a puny stripling, but obviously a man of some size. But then colloquialisms used in the world of sport generally smack of the Gilbertian. I'm taking it to mean Gilbert and Sullivan. That one has got past me. I'm presuming Gilbert and Sullivan. This is almost poetic, this stuff. There is, too, an elasticity in the expressions of the enthusiast that is at times far beyond the comprehension of a layman. For instance, to speak of the Lions of the South is to speak of Millwall. And when Leo the Lion, is not ominously wagging of his tail, when he is suffering from recovery, as he is at the moment, His Majesty is a tame docker, or by way of change, a bonny boy blue. I don't know what that's all about. I'm just reading it as it is. That each term is synonymous with Millwall, and at the Isle of Dogs, Tiny stands for the ponderous Joyce. Millwall's goalkeeper is quite a character. Like many others who guard the citadel and prevent the capitulation of the fortress, more football phraseology, he has peculiarities all of his own. Apologies, I'm trying to read this as it's written, so some of it sounds a bit stumbly, so, you know, forgive me. Money back guarantee, etc. There's a quote here from Tiny. He says, I play football, I keep goal, I am happy, comfortable and contented. This is what I feel, oh no, it's not a quote, it's what I feel sure what Joyce would say if he were asked questions about his career. He is what one would call a natural young man, one who never alters. I've been playing football ever since I was a lad and I've always kept goal. I think that's another made up quote. I think they didn't actually interview him, they just make quotes up to what they think he would say. And that's a technique I'm going to try and employ more often. Saves a lot of hassle, I reckon. Yes, it is. In each sentence, these are the things he would sum up, use to sum up his career, this writer says. It's a great technique. I like this. Tiny is the type of man who, when placed in a certain position, would quietly and conscientiously strive to do his best. If he failed, it would not be his fault. He was cradled in a rare footballing centre. Burton-on-Trent is his birthplace, 27 years ago, when he first saw the light in the town of Beer. And taking to chasing the big ball when he was quite a little boy, found himself one of the stalwarts of the Overseal Club. That must be a Burton club, Overseal. As goalkeeper for this junior organisation, he soon set people talking. And when he was in his teens, he was induced to go south to Southampton as understudy to the famous Jack Robinson. And whilst he was a saint, that Joyce was rechristened, so to speak. That's Tiny. Bloody, bloody, blah. It's a long old article. I'm going to finish here. Joyce has long been regarded as one of the most efficient custodians in the South. He is full of agility. Once in football regalia, he is quite kittenish. That's a strange way to think of somebody. Kittenish has been, he has keen perception and is more than ordinary gift of anticipation. His great reach and daring dives for the ball, the power to return the ball far up the field are features of his play. Let him be on the winning side. Let him be conscious that his side is on the highway to victory and he is almost an insurmountable barrier. Like all the members of the Millwall team, he is in high feather because of better prospects. And instead of being a pessimist, as he was a week or two ago, I don't know when this was written precisely, like a good many more, firmly now convinced that his side will have a most successful season. Joyce, who, by the way, started life as a collier, so he's worked in the mines, is one of the pillars of the local cricket team, plays a bit of cricket too, as a fast right-hand bowler. He set up a reign of terror amongst batsmen, and at the end of the season had taken 52 wickets for 205 runs. I actually read the whole piece there. I'll probably edit some of that out, because some of it was a little bit wordy, but I think you get a sense of the impression that John Tiny Joyce created. And there's a wonderful other clip that I found here where this is during the First World War. He's playing still at the age of 40 in the wartime, you know, casual leagues. That I think probably the best description we can give for the servicemen who are moving around the country to serve on the Western Front mostly. But it describes a game where he's playing at the age of 40 and got involved in a little bit of nastiness with a game between Millwall and QPR. As it describes here, the game between Rangers and Millwall at New Cross was marred by one of those unpleasant happenings. Oh dear. Dale and Joyce were the chief actors. And without going into details, it may be said that an encore is not desirable. So it sounds like they've had a row. He was still playing at the age of 42. We have touched upon this. Neil's piece that he did for the historical shows was brilliant. And I'm going to put the link into that if you want to find out a little bit more about Tiny Joyce. But he was in goal on this day for the Dockers, as I must keep remembering to call them. They weren't the Lions at this stage, they were the Dockers. But one name did leap out at me on the Southampton side of things. So although this is a Millwall show, you're going to have to forgive me, dear listeners, because the name of CB Fry at, I think that must be right back, possibly left back. Can't tell which way the team is formed here. CB Fry is quite a famous one. So I thought I'd have a quick look at his Wikipedia entry. He's a very well-known name, more well-known, to be honest, as a Test match cricketer. He played for England in cricket. He played as an England football international as well in 1896. Played a game against Ireland in 1901, coincidentally. So this was the same year that he made his England football debut. He was also an England cricket international, a batsman mostly. Quite a colourful figure. I mean, this when you go back to these Victorian sportsmen, public school, he was not from the working classes like our own Tiny that we've just heard about. He was a product of the upper classes, schooled at Repton School and then Oxford University. But some sportsmen, I mean, it has to be said that he played for Surrey, England, a batting average for a Test match batting average of 32. A bowler at county level, wickets, 5 wickets in innings 9 times, 10 wickets in a match twice. A rugby blue for Oxford, athletes, represented the University of Oxford against Cambridge. Acrobatics, I love this bit as well. CB Fry's party trick was to leap from a stationary position on the floor backwards onto the mantelpiece. He would face the mantel. I'm trying to picture this. I'm going to read it as it's written, so again, forgive me. He would face the mantelpiece, crouch down, take a leap upwards, turn in the air, and bow to the gallery with his feet planted on the shelf. Persuasion would occasionally get him to perform this turn at country houses, much to the interests of the guests. I'd love to see that. Somehow he's leapt onto the mantelpiece from a standing start and done a somersault in the air. But there's much, much more to CB Fry than those sporting achievements, as much as they take the take the breath away, really, when you read it all. He was a teacher, but more importantly, a politician. He was a representative for the Indian Legation at the League of Nations, formed after the end of the First World War in Geneva. He assisted his former Sussex cricket teammate, Ranjit Singhji. He assisted him here as the Indian Legation at the in Geneva for the League of Nations. He was reputedly, no one can really say if this is true, he reputedly offered the throne of Albania, so he could have become king of Albania, which he reportedly turned down for reasons that they don't really go into here, and stood as a liberal candidate in a number of elections during the 1920s. One interesting thing, journalist as well, I should add that, he appeared on This Is Your Life in the 1950s with Eamon Andrews. But he also wrote for Wisden and various newspapers. He suffered with mental health through his whole life. Partly, some believe, I mean, thankfully he's not alive, so I don't think, whether he's alive or not, I don't know. But his wife was some fierce battle axe. He married Beatrice Holm Sumner, daughter of Arthur Holm Sumner of Hatchlands Park in Guildford. She was 10 years older than C.B. Fry, and as it puts it in Wiki, she was known for her fiery, strong-willed, aggressive personality, and she was reckoned by many to be a cruel and domineering woman, and Fry lived in fear of her for the duration of their marriage. It goes on, and she made him thoroughly miserable, and he tried to stay away from her as much as possible. Many believe his unhappy marriage impacted on Fry's mental health. His daughter-in-law observed, "I should think anyone would have had a breakdown married to her." So that's quite... in 1984, their son, Stephen, said, "My mother ruined my father's life." And Stephen also played first-class cricket. It makes a throwaway comment that the actor and comedian Stephen Fry has claimed to be related, but there offers no proof on that. So... an odd life. CB Fry playing for Southampton in the fullback position. He only played for Southampton for 16 games, 1900 to 1902, then very, very briefly for Pompey. with one England cap in 1901. A major character, probably deserves a show in his own right, perhaps. And maybe I'll think about that some other time. But there we are, CB Fry. And on the Mill side of matters, Tiny Joyce, two huge characters of contrasting backgrounds and lives. Now, this was in the Southern League, this fixture. The Dockers finished third that season. Southampton finished third on the 42 points, just edged out on goal ratio, as they used in this particular league, from Tottenham, the winning team being Portsmouth. Mill Athletic finished sixth. Now, if you just to go back to my earlier point about the loss of the ground, the Athletic grounds, literally weeks before the start of the season, a complete new squad. I've already touched on the unfamiliarity of many of those names, but that's a massive achievement to finish in sixth position. It is the burning spirit of Millwall that season, and I will offer up that team, those men, as others have been on occasions over the years since, saviours of our club. So there we are. I'm going to close that there. That's Millwall losing at Southampton by 3-0 on the 23rd of November 1901, thanks to the Hampshire Independent. And I have to mention the great advert for Lipton's famous cocoa, which they say is strengthening, nourishing, and invigorating, each word getting another exclamation mark. Prices which defy competition. What great adverts they have. Part of the joy of looking at old newspapers, dear listeners, is the old adverts. So I'm going to close that game there. Southampton 3, Millwall 0, 23rd of October 1901 in the Southern League.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to Acton Millwall.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, as I said at the start of this little monologue, it feels like a monologue as I'm talking. I hope I'm not sounding like a monologue, but you'll have to be the judge of that. Random dates in the past sometimes don't produce an awful lot of content. We were lucky with the Millwall v Southampton game in that there was an actual match report on the random date yesterday anyway. But today it's come up with 1937, a very interesting year. But on the November the 24th, 1937, not an awful lot to report. So I went to November the 23rd, 1937, and there's just one small piece which fascinated me, actually. This is the Daily Mirror that I'm looking at, I should explain. So I'm looking at the Daily Mirror dated yesterday, 1937, 23rd of November, 1937. And one small paragraph mentions Millwall. And that is to say that Austria FC's visit is off. And just a sentence report. Millwall's match with Austria FC which was due to have been played at the Den next Monday, has been cancelled by the Austrian club. That's it, end of report. And then there's other stuff on there with, it's a sports page, so Canadian heavyweight Ed Wenstob is having got a big lump of meat from the butcher's there, mutton ready for his dinner, stuff like that. So I was fascinated by this little report. I mean, this would be 1937-38 season, November, which was a very successful season for us in the end. I had a quick look at the millhistory.org site, and as this game was played, or wasn't played, as this game was postponed, I should say, which would be around about the November the 20th, there was an away win on the 20th, an away win at Northampton. A goal by one Billy Walsh, who I read in my copy of Lions of the South by James Murray, was a centre forward, a Lancastrian, who had been signed quite recently, as this newspaper was published, from Scotland, from Heart of Midlothian. They were chasing another player called Delaney, who was playing for Celtic, with a Millwall rebuffed. And manager of the day, huge character called Charlie Hewitt, who again we've touched on in the Neil Fisler series that I did in the course of the summertime, focused his attentions on Billy Walsh. And after seeing him play against Partick Thistle, finally signed him on October the 1st, so literally a few weeks before this short report, this newspaper on the 23rd of November. Walsh was described as quite a catch, and for a fee of £1,750, just short of £2,000, he had got a man who in his last Football League season had scored 33 times for Oldham, and then at Tynecastle had not been dropped once from one of the top three clubs in Scotland. Billy Walsh had scored the goal at Northampton, which I imagine had been the county ground at that time, Northampton, which I think was shared with Northants Football Club. So that 1-0 win in front of 10,000 gave Millwall 23 points and actually put us top of the table in the third division south. But there seems to be a bit of a gap in fixtures for some reason. There's no fixture the week after, and then a game away at Cardiff on the 4th of December, and then no fixture the week after that to the 18th. So I'm just wondering whether this friendly against FC Austria, which they cancelled, was arranged to try and keep the team in shape, because there's a noticeable dip in form when they do come back. A series of losses and draws across December that would put the Lions down to mid-table from top. Strange season. Just looking at this again will deserve a show in its own right, dear listeners. The 1937-38 Third Division South season was, in the end, a successful one. We finished champions in the end, but we began the season on the rise, going top, just as I've said there, just at this game at Northampton. We were first all through October, November. We then have a fixture gap, not helped by the cancellation of the fixture we're talking about here, FC Austria. And then we fall back down to mid-table by February 1938. And then a Millwall surge of win on win on win on win as we go through March and April, and then finally the championship itself secured at Exeter in front of 13,000, a 5-1 win at Exeter on the 7th of May 1938, and as James Murray describes it, the ground tightly packed, almost all of it with Millwall fans who had made the long trip to go and watch the Lions, they hope, secure the championship, which they did, with a 5-1 win over Exeter City, to jubilant scenes at Waterloo Station when the team returned back to London. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. But that's the 37-38 season. I might look at that in more depth another time, do a little bit more research on that. But this report here is in the Daily Mirror. Millwall's match with Austria FC was to have been played at the Den next Monday and has been cancelled by the Austrian club. Now, we don't get any clues to why they've cancelled, but I thought I'd take a look at Austria. Which I take to mean Austria Vienna, known in the Austrian regions and German-speaking countries, actually, just as Austria. We probably call it Austria Vienna. This would have been a tumultuous time in Austrian history. The Anschluss, the absorption by Nazi Germany, would follow in 1938. There was a lot of agitation amongst the left and right in Austria at this time. There was an Austrian Nazi party campaigning for union with Hitler's Germany. And that would follow the year after, when in the months after the scheduled game between Millwall and Austria. Who knows what caused them to not be able to make this particular game. I can only speculate that tumult was running the streets of Vienna at this point. Austria apparently are known as a Juden club, which means in German taunts, the Jewish club. So one can only imagine that it would have been an easy time in the lead up to what we now call Anschluss, the annexation of Austria. It's a strange thing to be talking about these subjects in the context of football, but life goes on whilst great events unfold. The Austria side were quite a powerful team in 1930s football, and I'm just reading the Wikipedia here. I don't know this, I'm reading this. Winners of a competition called the Mitropa Cup, which was a kind of an early forerunner of the European Cup, and then now the Champions League. They mentioned the star of their side, who probably would have been a man expected to have come to play at the Den, Matthias Sindelar, subsequently voted in 1998 as Austria's greatest footballer. He actually, they believe, committed suicide, maybe not, or was it something darker? In 1939, 23rd of January 1939, carbon monoxide poisoning he died of in his apartment. Having refused to play for the new combined German and Austrian national team, citing injury and wanting to retire from international football. He met his end unresolved, I think, is the way that it's described here. And I think we can probably all draw our own conclusions. Austria, Vienna, during the course of the union with Nazi Germany, became renamed as Sportclub Ostmark Vienne, as an attempt to Germanize it, but it was actually reverted to its Austrian name, Austria Vienne, shortly afterwards, actually quite bravely, in 1938. They play in a violet, kind of all violet colour here. So no fixture to report on there. I hope, though, in the context of the events in the wider world, that you find that little scrap of information on in the Daily Mirror of the 23rd of November 1937, interesting. I always think that football is there and then history goes on around us constantly, as it did in these times here too. So I'm going to call it quits there. That's two games for the price of one. It's one non-game, I suppose, and one game. I hope you found this interesting. I hope you found it something that you might want me to carry on. Do let me know. Really do appreciate any feedback we get, even when you get odd bod reviews on Apple. I do appreciate every bit of feedback that we get. If nothing else, it gives me a laugh, and you get good, bad, and indifferent reviews, but I appreciate it. So let me know what you think of these shows. If you want to hear any more, I'm happy to try and do them more often. And if you don't like it, then please do let me know. I'm not precious about this kind of stuff. So there we are. That closes the Daily Mirror, 23rd of November 1937. Austria FC are not going to be coming to the Den next Monday. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. For the moment, that's arrivederci. We'll be back after the Reading game with Harry and Michael Avery and the Mill Fan Show. Until then, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.